The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
It's work that almost cost him his life.
They call it a near-death experience.
25 years later, he can't forget firing his gun to defend himself.
A lot of cops walk around, and I was one of them, saying, but it's not going to happen to me.
He says he won't forget his reaction. Sleepless nights and a depression, he says, led to a post-traumatic stress diagnosis.
All of a sudden, I started to have problems. And I didn't know what it was. I just literally thought I was cracking up.
He's not alone. Critical stress is part of police work.
You want me in or out?
Cops aren't only policing. They're taking crime victims to the hospital and burying friends and colleagues all too often.
Just shut up, radio. Give me a medic here.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that today. I just saw really powerful video footage of a group of officers who saved a man. His vehicle went into a pond or a canal of some sort. These guys, four or five of them, diving in the water, pulling this guy out, giving him CPR, and saving his life, you know? And just to watch the video cam of that and to watch the heroism of these guys, the selflessness of it, I thought, bravo, you know, if that was me that was saved, I'd want those guys to be my friends the rest of my life, and I'd want to take care of them. Heroic job. And yet I also heard news of a Chicago police officer who just took his own life recently, died by suicide, 47 years old. That's all, 47 years old. He was an off-duty officer in his car on the southwest side of the city, and he wasn't the victim of a crime. But I guess the job, the stress, the whatever it was that drove the individual to that place, cost him to take his life. Last year, seven members of the Windy City Police Force took their lives. That was a record. And it's way too many. I mean, the violence of the city of Chicago is pretty rampant right now. You probably saw some of the footage of the past week of, you know, kids on the street. Chicago is one of my favorite cities. I think it's a beautiful city. I think the people of Illinois are just wonderful people. But being a police officer in a major city after the death of George Floyd, tough thing. You saw the defund the police movement. You've seen what has happened in Seattle and in Minneapolis, and it's a stressful job. Police have, people don't show them respect, you know, half the time, and we'll probably talk to my next guest about this coming up in a minute. I've often said if people would keep their hands on the wheel, say yes or no, officer, comply, you wouldn't see half of these stories. Quite often they're running back to the car, grabbing for something, a knife, fighting, doing whatever it is, resisting, and that escalates. And then, of course, the cop becomes the bad guy in that situation. No official data has been collected on law enforcement suicide, but a new law passed by Congress requires the FBI to start doing that. So closest we can come to accurate data is a survey that was done by USA Today along with the Rudderman Family Foundation. They did research in 2018. They did it again in 2022, and the 2022 data reflects what happened in 2020. 116 police officers died by suicide. 113 died in the line of duty. So let me just rephrase that. Just give you a perspective on this. 116, they died by suicide more than died in the line of duty. I mean, any death is too many. Please pray. Pray for them. And just show your gratitude to these officers. Not only are police officers under stress, but also first responders are as well. I've got a friend who's a firefighter. Many of you might know paramedics. Believe it or not, they show even higher suicide numbers. The USA Today report found that 127 suicides were reported amongst firefighters and EMTs. 127 of them. That's more than police. So helping the men and women in our local front lines, that's not an easy task. They see trauma on a daily basis. And a lot of jurisdictions have set up now mental health task force to help, but they can only help if a person who needs the help asks for it. I'm joined today by a former second-generation law enforcement professional that has over 22 years of experience in Cook County in Chicago. And today he's the department chair at Calumet College of St. Joseph for Public Safety Programs. I was just talking to him before we became live here, and he teaches a lot of police officers. He serves as a mental health therapist, intern, and he's treated a lot of first responders, and we're just here to talk a little bit about it. If you're in law enforcement, first responder, I'd love to hear your own story. Maybe you're married to one. Feel free to give us a call. Let's know what you're seeing. how you feel about it all. The number is 888-914-9149. It's a delight to have with me Dr. Danny McGuire. I like that. He served years in the service, went on to get your degrees. That's cool.
Yeah, it was an interesting ride. But one of the things, as I was listening to you talk, I thought of this. I challenge anybody to find another profession where someone has these unique life roles as a father, mother, sister, brother, husband, wife. Then you go to work, you strap on this bullet-resistant vest because it's bullet-resistant. It doesn't stop all the bullets, right?
Yeah, right.
Some go through. And then you have to flip this switch from being this loving father, mother, and you have to go out, and in a split second, you'll give your life for someone you never even met before. And that person could absolutely been downtown throwing urine and feces at a police officer, yeah. But you're giving your life.
Yeah.
And then expect that perfection.
Yeah.
Like, I challenge you to find that for what they get paid and the stuff they have to go through. In addition, I often think of, you break your ankle, you go to a doctor.
Yeah.
You go to a specialist, right? After you break your ankle, go see the orthopedic specialist. Well, you have a foot and ankle specialist, you have a hand and wrist specialist, or a lawyer. I need a lawyer. Okay. Do you need a family lawyer? Do you need a civil lawyer? Do you need a criminal lawyer? They're specialists, right? They have specialties, and they're specialists within a specialty. Police officer goes to the police academy, 600 to 1,000 hours of training. Then they're expected to go out and be an EMT, a social worker, a psychologist, a babysitter, a parent. That's too many hats. You're putting unbelievable pressure on someone who's imperfect. We're humans.
Yeah.
And expecting perfection. That's a lot of pressure.
What's the greatest challenge of all those hats? Is it the psychologist, the social worker, the paramedic? What is it when you get out there?
Well, I think people within law enforcement, they get good at certain things. So I think it goes person to person what the biggest challenge is, right? Some people responding to domestics. I mean, I went to a presentation, a psychologist was presenting and said, the average person experiences 1 to 2 traumatic events in their entire life.
Wow.
A police officer may experience 20 or 30 in a 20-year career. Well, I would even say someone who works in the Chicago Police Department may experience, depending where you work, what your job is, you could experience that many in 5 years.
Wow.
So that leads to all this stress, relationship issues, alcoholism, all sorts of things.
Yeah, I have a buddy of mine who's an FBI agent. I've got another friend who is a cop. The divorce rate amongst police, I don't know what it is for firefighters or paramedics, but police, it's really high. Is it because you demand the respect, or you deal with the ugliness of life so often, you go home? How does that affect the dynamic of married life, of family?
Well, having clients as a mental health therapist intern, you'll have a client, let's just say it's a police officer, a male police officer. And, oh, man, my wife's driving me crazy. I mean, so I'll say, bring her into a therapy session.
Right.
Just bring her in. Why? Just bring her into a therapy session. Okay. So I'll sit down, and I'll do that stat about the 1 to 2 traumatic events in life. Maybe he's seen 10 or 15 in the last, 7 or 8 years of his life. And then I talk about the common responses to trauma, withdrawing, depression, all these things. And usually a light bulb goes off.
Mm-hmm.
The wife will report, hey, we're going to dinner. And he's looking around. He's looking at other women. I'm like, are you looking at other women? He goes, no. I'm looking at every exit in the place, looking at every person that walks in to make sure this isn't someone that I've arrested. I'm hypervigilant. These are all things that come with that profession. It's a calling. It's like clergy. Anybody who becomes a police officer for the cool uniform and dental plan, you don't last long.
Yeah, right.
Right? It's a calling. So when you have this unbelievable calling to do the job, you get into that. That becomes part of your personality. It's who you are. And it's everything. You try to protect your family. The communication is lacking because you want to protect the person you love. You want to protect them from the things you've seen. How was your day? You're not a bean counter. You don't work behind a desk. This third person that came to the cash register was just, a really mean person. You deal with really mean person from the time you start your role. You might go to roll call in a place in Chicago, some district, anywhere you can work in Chicago. You may have 30 calls waiting for service. 30.
Wow.
Domestics, wow. Person shot, person stabbed, all these things. It's unbelievable the pressure that they put on police officers to do so many different things, wear so many hats, and they expect perfection. And it's just the last person I heard about being perfect got put on a cross for being perfect.
Amen to that. A lot of guys retiring. I was sharing with you off air about recruitment. I'm seeing lots of ads for recruitment for officers in cities, trying to incentivize them. A lot of guys are stepping down because of lack of respect that we're seeing for law enforcement and these politicians who want to defund the police. I mean, how does that make any sense? Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I'm all pro more social workers. Why not find money to aid them in their duties, but to take funds away from enforcement doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. How's that resonating within the law enforcement community?
Well, teaching at Cal College, as we were talking off the air, we have all of my students are police officers. Most of them are Chicago police officers. I would say the lion's share, 90% are Chicago police officers. So from 2020 to now, classes usually start about an hour of group therapy. You know, they're stating what they're feeling, how they're feeling moving forward. People are leaving in droves, they say. Now there's rumors out there that people are going to leave with the new mayor. I try to be optimistic with that, and I think that leadership is important. Leadership can take the unmotivated and make them motivated. If you have a good leader,
it's true,
you can move forward. The best leadership, in my opinion, is being a servant leader, being an authentic leader. Mm-hmm. If you lead with passion, Jesus led with passion, right? He had clear boundaries, right? He was a great leader. He was the quintessential servant leader. He gave his life for us. Amen. So you take a police officer, a leader, and make you're a servant leader, you're an authentic leader, you're going to do very well. And I think it goes from place to place. And Chicago's a big place. You've got 8,000-9,000 police officers. That's a huge amount of police officers. And you have leaders that are good. In my experience, yep. You had leaders that were good and leaders that were not so good. And I remember a lot of the lessons that the not-so-good leaders taught me. They taught me exactly what not to do. Huh. And the good leaders, you took those almost for granted, like this is exactly what we're supposed to do. Huh. So when you remember those things and when you become a leader, you put those out to people, you can motivate the unmotivatable. It's actually possible. As for retirements, I think people have to be optimistic. The new mayor hasn't even been sworn in. We know that there's been snippets in the media about, you know, defunding the police, policies, things like that. But I'm of the school of let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's kind of be optimistic, because the calling of a police officer is much larger than the mayor or the superintendent. Someone once asked me, hey, do you know Superintendent whoever? And I said, listen, dude, I got a better chance of meeting Mick Jagger, because my buddy works security at, right. You know, at Soldier Field. So maybe if he walk, I can get backstage, hey, Mick. And maybe he'll say, hey, man, what's up? Right.
Yeah, right.
Unless I'm going to meet the Lord.
Yeah.
Right. I'm about to meet the Lord, or I really messed up bad. And then the superintendent might mention my name. I'm not meeting the superintendent, please. Not in a place like Chicago. So individuals, officers have to look within themselves and find what their motivation is. Yeah. Self-efficacy. Let's go out, get educated, go out and make some changes in your life that are going to help you.
Yeah,
I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. Right. Very much so. My guest today, Dr. Danny McGuire, if you want to join us, love to hear from you. You can dial in right now, 888-914-9149. We'll take a few phone calls, and Dr. McGuire basically helps a lot of first responders and police officers who have suffered trauma and have gone through a pretty difficult time. I just taking a look today where we are both as a culture and what a lot of our law enforcement and first responders have to face. If you're in those areas, you serve in the God has called you to that vocation, feel free to dial in. We'll take a few calls now. Joe in Passaic, New Jersey. Good afternoon. You are on the air with Danny.
Good afternoon. I was a Passaic police officer for 33 years. Now, Passaic is like New York City Quincinet. It's 3.2 square miles. But contrary to New York, we never had the manpower or the equipment anywhere to come near the crises that we had to confront. We had riots. I mean, you go out with 10 people on a riot, that doesn't work very good. And then the administration, they're like, well, what happened? Things like that. I mean, we had it all. We used to average like 13 murders a year. It seemed like every Thanksgiving there was a murder. We had suicides. We had 10 police officers go to jail for various crimes, burning down nightclubs, robbing banks. I mean, we had it all. our police chief back then got on the cover of an infamous magazine called Chick Magazine as one of the 10 worst police officers in the worst police chief in the United States. So, I mean, it was madness, you know. And only by the grace of God did we survive. We had officers commit suicide. Yeah. We had everything. Everything that this gentleman was talking about, we had it and condensed into a really small area.
Yeah. Hey, so, Joe, thanks. Thanks for calling. Thanks again for your service. Sounded like a tough run for you. And I'll let you respond, Danny.
Well, first I would ask Joe, like, you know, what steps did he take to keep himself from keeping his mental health, keeping himself motivated to continue to do the job? You know, you have to look within yourself to find the motivation. Oh, you're still on, Joe. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Trying to do what the right thing is, despite, you know, sometimes you do the right thing when you don't have the resources. And then they go, why'd you do that? Well, you didn't. A quick story. There was a big fire at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the winter. The protocol was call the nearest school, have the school open the gym, and have the people go across the street to the school. Nobody answered the phone. Five schools, nobody answered. What do you do? I called the local bus company. I said to them, look, we need a bus down here. We got people standing out in the cold. I said, I'll pay for it. They said, no, community service. Wow. They sent the bus down. So, you know, the next morning I was in the chief's office and he was reaming me out. Who gave you the authority to call a bus company? I said, it's not costing the city nothing. Nobody got sick. Nobody got mad. What do you want from us? We don't have the resources. It was like that time. I mean, I could give you 100 stories like that.
Yeah. But, sure.
I'm sorry.
No. The level of frustration, I think, amongst law enforcement must be pretty high, huh, Doctor?
You call me Danny. All right. Doctor, you know, it's, I'm not in that kind of titles or have that kind of ego, I guess. I just like Danny. Danny's fine. I look at it from this perspective. You know, I have a story to tell you too, Joe. So there was I was teaching a master's course and there was a young officer in the class. And he was really salty, really angry. And during the class, you know, the older people in the class, the older coppers were making fun of him. And, I said, hey man, you're too salty. You're too young. You're 26 years old, 3 years on the job. You know, some of these guys got more time in the locker room at the station than you got in the station. Just let's pump the brakes here. Let's talk after class. So I took him for coffee and he looked at me and I said, so what's going on? He goes, I'll tell you what's going on. He goes, could I go to work tonight where I work? And he worked in probably one of the worst districts in the city of Chicago. He goes, could I go to work tonight, work afternoons, get maybe in a car chase with someone who shot at someone. And then this person turns around, points a gun at me in a split second. You know, I end up, God forbid, having to take this man's life. Could I still, you know, even though I followed all my training, all the rules and regulations, all the policy, did everything I was supposed to do, could I still lose my job? Could I still go to jail? Could I still, you know, have my name discredited in the media and all those things? And, you know, I looked at him and I said, well, I guess, yes, you could. He goes, then why would I want to stay here? But the one thing that this young man did was he practiced some self-efficacy. He went and educated himself, got a master's degree, and he went to a federal agency. I just talked to him last week. And, you know, he's doing very well and he's very happy with his decision. Some people don't have that luxury. So we have to take and normalize our own chaos and use some resources, use mental health therapy. So many police officers are still afraid to walk through the door, so to speak, and get some help from people that are there to help them. Joe, your story is not different than many police officers that, you know, I practiced, I overcame, I adapted, I did what I had to do to make the situation better. And, you know, you had to eat that sandwich, you know, one bite at a time.
That's a great way of putting it. Hey, Joe, thank you very much. Frank is listening to us in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. Hey, Frank.
Hi, Drew. I just turned you on at around quarter after. And the doctor, he's a doctor, right?
Yeah. Call him Danny, though. He's a police officer.
Former,
but go right ahead.
Let's say I used to be a cop. I'm not no more because of medical reasons, not associated with anything. But the stress, I mean, I worked in one of the busiest district divisions in the city, in the country, the number of crimes and homicides and everything. It never bothered me. A lot of guys I knew, it never bothered them either. I used to be a nurse before I was a cop. I saw worse things like in the ER than I did in the police department. I think what they say about cops are not as stressed, I'm saying it's true, but I think it's, they make it sound like it's worse than what it is. I don't think cops are stressed out by seeing gunshots or violence or domestic abuse. I think it's overrated. I mean, I don't think it's that bad for people.
Frank, I guess everybody processes things a little bit differently. Really, that's kind of the key to this whole thing.
So I understand it. I'm just saying is, like, if people didn't, I think if people didn't talk about it all the time, yeah, police officers wouldn't be complaining about it all the time. I think you put the foot in their head that you're under a lot of stress.
Let me ask you a quick question, Frank. Then I'll get Danny's take too. How stressful was the job? You didn't find it that stressful working in Philadelphia?
No, because I mean, I would finish one job, put myself back in the service. I want that next job right away.
Okay.
I mean, a busy district, like 17, 22 jobs a day.
Wow.
A slow district, you might get 0 to 3 calls a day.
All right. Well, Frank, I always appreciate hearing from you. I'm going to let Danny respond too. Philadelphia, Chicago. Is Chicago second or third largest city in the country? Now, number two?
I believe it's third.
Number three? Right. Philly's what, number 5 now? I think Houston beat them somewhere in that range. I think, I don't know. So very, very populated, very, you know, certain areas of the cities, those cities could be very crime ridden. So
I would say that you took the words out of my mouth. People process things differently. You know, people have a different level of being able to cope with the stress and the trauma they see. So again, using a story, you take someone who is a war veteran and you put them in a police role, and they may be able to cope with things a little bit better than someone who, let's say, went to college out of high school. Right. And so people process things differently. Frank, you were blessed with the ability to cope. You saw things in the emergency room. You were already already learning how to deal with your stress and trauma. I do understand your point, because I had a conversation with someone today prior to the show talking about he had said that, you know, he believes that police officers are coddled today.
Yeah.
And I think of my time, I remember, having to go to a therapist myself. I became a police officer at 21 years old, and I worked in a federally funded narcotics task force. And I was assigned to a unit, called MEG that was responsible for long-term narcotics investigations.
Wow.
And it was a very stressful thing for me as a 21-year-old kid. I didn't know how to process it or handle it. And I was petrified. And someone said, you need to go get some help. Drinking was a problem.
Yep.
So I went and got some help, and I paid cash out of pocket. Wow. To go see this person, because I was petrified that someone's going to find out. Mm-hmm. And I was waiting to go to the city of Chicago to be a police officer. And I'm like, if they find out, they're going to think I'm a nutcase. And
yeah, right.
It's simply not true. Right. But for me, it was very difficult to handle those things. And I think people process things differently. So Frank, God bless.
Yep.
And be thankful that you had that given to you.
What do you think is driving the suicide rate? I mean, it's stunning. And we can talk also about firefighters and paramedics. The suicide rate's even higher than law enforcement. And, of course, they see some really horrible things as well. But is it lack? What is it? What's driving the fact that they cannot go on and they're going to terminate their lives?
So I had a speaker series at the college in the fall. Each month I had speakers come in. And I had a speaker, Dr. Olivia Johnson, and she wrote this book about police suicide. Yeah. And she had mentioned there were 10 fatal factors that contribute to police suicide. And the top three were relationship issues, drug and alcohol abuse,
mm-hmm,
and cumulative stress and trauma. Those were the top three.
Wow.
So let's not even talk about the rest.
Right, right. That's good.
So, you know, access to firearms, all those other things, they had all those financial problems, yeah, close to retirement, medical issues. But those were the top three: interpersonal relationship problems, drugs and alcohol, and cumulative stress and trauma. And as a mental health therapist intern, when I do have my clients, you see a lot of that. You see a lot of interpersonal relationship issues, yeah, because the communication breaks down. Right. And then you have one partner. They kind of seal themselves off from the other partner. There's not a lot of communication. They forget how to communicate with each other. Then you have the drugs and alcohol. OK, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm not ashamed to say it. And when I say it to people, I tell people only in the way so someone may approach me and say, hey, I think I have a problem. And that's my way of helping and paying it forward. So alcohol is an issue. It's a big issue. Especially in the police world. I know today is 420. That doesn't seem to be a big police issue, right? I mean, because you still have drug tests, right?
Right.
And then you have cumulative stress and trauma is what we're talking about. Being able to process that trauma, maybe feeling like you can't talk to anybody. Maybe someone You feel like if you mention this to one of your coworkers, they're going to think you're a wimp or you can't handle the street anymore, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Right. So I think those factors are dry. You could put that on any first responder, right? Anybody in this field.
Yeah. I've got to take a break, but before I do, do police take it out on the people that they deal with in the street, the people they pull over, the people they arrest when they're dealing with interpersonal problems or they're drinking or whatever it may be? Do you see that?
No, I can't speak for everybody else, but I can tell you from my experience, the people that I worked with were some of the bravest men and women that I ever worked with. And I don't think they're interpersonal issues related to the street.
Good. Well, stay with me. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls and we'll talk more. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Weigh in now. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show.
But it is good to be with you today. Thanks for joining us. You know, so much news making the headlines, especially when it comes to the police. There's been a big move for recruitment. We've seen the defund the police movement, that rhetoric being, put forward with a greater frequency in recent days. You might have caught some news in Chicago. There's been some looting. Two innocent bystanders who were, I think, visitors to the city of Chicago ended up getting beat up. A very heroic woman intervened and, could have saved their lives. The city's mayor there is a guy named Brandon Johnson. He said in an interview that retailers are the looters because they make profits on what they sell, and their type of looting should be disrupted, not the people who are breaking the windows and robbing and taking stuff for these people who are trying to make a living. Look, there's nothing wrong with profit. There really isn't. You got to pay the bills, right? You have to live and you have to eat. But, I mean, this is the confusion we see, I think, culturally. Different mindsets from different political sectors, from different cultural sectors. I was talking with my guest today, Dr. Danny McGuire, who is a second-generation law enforcement professional, a couple decades of experience in Chicago and Cook County, and now is helping people. He's gone on to help in the area of mental health. He's a therapist, and I was just talking about what we're seeing societally. I think it's rooted also in the family. You know, we talk about how Satan wants to attack the family. It's marriage and family. And we have a fatherless crisis in the city of Baltimore. When riots were taking place there, 67% of the households were fatherless. When people are not showing respect to legitimate authority, it's either not being taught or it's not being modeled. And I think the breakdown of the family has a lot to do with it. We got a lot to talk about. I'm just pontificating here. You are more than welcome to join me, correct me, sound off, join the conversation. The number's 888-914-9149. Let's take a quick call for you here. We'll go back to the phone. San Diego is on deck. Kimberly is joining us. She's the mother of a police officer, I believe. Kimberly, good afternoon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you, Dr. Danny, for being on the show. I really love what you said, that it is service before self. And being a police, especially these days, it is definitely a vocation. My son is with the Chula Vista Police Department. He's been on for 1 year. My daughter is actually graduating at the end of the month in criminal justice and is going through a background investigation to become in law enforcement, not sure exactly which capacity. But my husband, we've been married for 28 years, and he served with the Department of Justice Bureau of Narcotics. So my heart is with you and all those in that bleed blue that are in law enforcement. And really what I wanted to say is there's a 30-year difference between when my husband went through the academy and now when my son just graduated. And just the amount of compassion now, and that my husband recognizes that back then it wasn't cool or it wasn't kosher to necessarily ask for help, as it is now. And thank goodness, because my heart can only take so much. And so I, you know, really what I am doing is working with my prayer warriors and going to mass every morning and praying for my family and for those that are in law enforcement serving.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for praying for the men and women in law enforcement. That's a great story. Your husband's right. I started a police academy May 4th of 1992, the Sheriff's Police Academy. So policing has changed and the dynamic has changed. But what's changed? What's changed is social media and the attention, right? So there's an old timer that once told me, he said recently, he said, you know, if you think about it, when we came on the job, they didn't like us either, but it wasn't like it was on blast on television and everything else. And as to your point, Drew, earlier about, you know, breakdown and everything, I think it's just a societal breakdown because of social media, because of things like YouTube and likes and hits and views, and people think it's cool to do these things so they get a million views. I think that's a huge game changer for us is the social media aspect of it.
Well, you see that in cities around the country where there's they're taking cars and they're doing donuts and they're spinning, and this ride in Chicago with these teenagers, a bunch of teenagers, you know, young kids, and they're putting it all on YouTube or social media.
Exactly. Well, that's the point. Like, you see a police officer fighting with somebody, yeah. People have their phones out and they're recording it. Yeah, right? True. I mean, come on. I saw something, a snippet. I try not to watch too much media, the social media and things like that. But I saw a snippet of a pizza delivery guy in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
The police were chasing some guy in a stolen car, and he puts his leg out and trips him.
I love
it. And then he's like, I'm getting death threats for doing this.
Are you kidding?
Like, how could you trip a kid? This is what this guy's saying. He goes, I was in the right place at the right time.
Oh, my gosh. I saw that video.
Right. I mean, it was great. I thought it was great. I mean,
you helped. Why not?
I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard. I couldn't watch the rest of it because it was, to me, it was hilarious. But he said he was getting death threats from people. And he's like, I just thought I was doing the right thing. Of course you were doing the right thing. Yeah, of course. Right. Right?
It's bizarre. I mean, we live in a bizarre world sometimes. I'm telling you, when I hear some of these stories. Also, you know, Kimberly brings up the point that policing may have changed. There's more compassion. I think so, too. I think
I agree.
Psychology is a lot better. We understand that.
I agree.
As well. But, you know, I also know that, you know, there's a lot of paramedics listening right now, a lot of firefighters as well. Opioids. I mean, it's a different world today when on the streets of Philadelphia you've got trank, you know, and people are losing limbs. Heroin was an epidemic. Now what do you have? You have fentanyl. It's surging over the border, and innocent people are dying. I mean, people are doing the drugs sometimes unaware of the of really the fact they're taking their life in their own hands. How have the drugs changed things? And I don't know whether this is a fair question. Maybe you may not be able to answer it. Cartels. I saw a report that the cartel, Sinaloa cartel and a number of others, very prevalent in different cities around the United States. And they're really operating out of the states. It's no longer just, you know, giving somebody a ticket or helping some drunk get home. I mean, you're dealing with organized crime, and you're dealing with an opioid epidemic that is just wreaking havoc on so many different levels.
Well, in my time, it was crack, right? Crack was out there. Crack was a newer thing. Crack was everywhere,
yeah.
Right? Cocaine, crack. So I think as time goes on, you know, drugs change, people change. I don't know how it would impact my students and my clients. They really don't report having a lot of issues with, you know, finding somebody who's overdosed on drugs or anything like that. But it definitely is a game changer because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's just the devil working, right? Continuing to do his evil deeds.
No kidding. Hey, you can join us right now if you want to get in. Maybe you're a paramedic, a firefighter, a first responder, a police officer, maybe a military. We're looking at really the trauma that comes with that role today. And Dr. Danny McGuire joins me today. He served for years and is now trying to help those who've been wounded or struggling find out that, hey, there is hope, there is help, there is freedom, there are better days ahead. It's not as bad as the media always points out. I mean, you watch the news, you're thinking the world's ending. I mean, really, I watch the news sometimes, I'm like, I can't take it. I just can't take it.
You think police officers are murdering people by the bushel. You know, it's just simply
it's crazy.
Not happening.
Joanne in Naples, Maine, thank you for joining us. You're on with Danny.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Danny. Thank you very much for this program. I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a Boston Police career officer killed in the line of duty. My brother and uncle also were BPD. I have the greatest respect for all of them. And when I became an emergency department nurse, career nurse, working all different shifts, not uncommon to have day, night, and evening rotations in 1 week. I saw my father go through that. He started drinking to help him sleep, and then the alcohol took hold. And it really, it affects the family. It affects, he was always angry. He was always tired, never could do anything with us because he was either working or exhausted. So I think they have to take that into consideration, just like shift workers of any kind. And now people are showing up with AR-15s. It's a different world. So I truly respect the CPD, and I follow Father Brandt and the chaplain's ministry. I think that's wonderful, and it's terrific that you're with them.
Hey, thank you, Joanne. I appreciate the call. Daniel, let you respond.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm sorry to hear your father was killed in line of duty. I'll pray for him and all the police officers. You come from a long line of police. My father was a police officer, and that's why I went into law enforcement. Wow. My dad was my hero as a kid. Other kids liked athletes and music stars and movie stars, and I idolized my dad. So that's why I went into law enforcement. So it's definitely a calling. It's definitely a family thing for me. I call it the family business. But the alcohol is huge, you know. And on the police department, I remember being in the parking lot after work, and there was a stint in time where I was sober, and someone went to hand me a beer. I said, no, I don't drink. And, you know, some hammerhead says, well, you can't trust a guy who doesn't drink.
Oh, man.
You know, like the mystique was, you know, and it's a coping mechanism, right? Yeah. So I feel sorry for being an alcoholic myself. I feel sorry for these people because when you drink, you don't have to deal with the demons. The demons are happy. They're happy you're drinking. You're destroying yourself. When you don't drink, you become sober. You have to face those demons. Yeah. And that's when you need the help sometimes. You need the help to get over the goal line, to beat some of those issues that you're having, because you're taking the demons head on. Just sitting in a garage and drinking all day, demons, they're doing a dance. Devil's happy. So you have to face those things head on. And that's with your dad. I'm sorry to hear that it was that way.
What brought you to sobriety? I mean, how bad did it get for you?
Well, look, there was a point in time where I was sober for about 6 years, 11 months, and 2 weeks, and then I relapsed, right?
Love it.
And it was just a point where I had gotten married. I just had my first child, who's now 24. And I had to make a change, because drinking for me was, you know, as soon as I started drinking at 17 years old, that was it. You know, it progressively got worse. And as the stress happened and the traumas happened and the things, you know, I would be petrified to go buy drugs. I mean, I was a good kid. I didn't cause any trouble. I didn't even know what drugs were. I didn't even know what they looked like. Right. So now I've got to go in the middle of this, you know, neighborhood that's a violent neighborhood and try to buy drugs off some guy on the corner. I mean, to me, it was gut-wrenching. So then it just started the progress of downhill. And I got sober because I had a child. I needed to grow up. I needed to get in a good place. I was sober for a while, and then, you know, relationship issues happened and I relapsed and I drank again. And then, in August of 2020, I said no more, you know, 'cause I was just lying to myself for 14 years. Everything was not real. It was, you know, I was doing things just to make things look like they were certain ways, virtue signaling, let's say, you do those things. And then finally one day I said enough. You know, I was so much better when I was sober. I had a second child while I was sober. He was diagnosed with autism the day before his second birthday. He's profoundly impacted. He's going to be 23 now.
Wow.
If I wasn't sober when that diagnosis came, it would have been a catastrophe, let me tell you. But when I started drinking to cope with those things again, at the point where in 2020, I said, you know what, enough. You know, like, you've got to handle your problems. You need to handle your issues and your problems, and you need to move forward. And I did.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You have a lot of hope to a lot of other people, too.
No, that's why
and
I talk about
there is
it.
Healing and there is freedom from addiction. I know when you're in the throes of it, loved ones think, this person will never be free. You know, there's a demon, and it possesses them. It owns them. They're in the bottle, or they're addicted to the drug. And I've often shared the story of my own father, who struggled with alcohol for, you know, most of my young life. Never a violent man, never, ever, ever laid a hand on us, ever. But like Joanne, you know, got tired or grumpy or whatever it might be. And it does affect, I think it affects the family dynamic. But prayer prayer is such a big part of that liberation.
Huge.
My mother prayed the rosary for decades for him, and he was miraculous. I was with him when he was healed, and it was a true miracle when he was liberated. But that's why I can speak with such conviction about the fact that with God, all things are possible. There's healing from the depression you're going through, the anxiety. You know, your work situation can change. The addiction's not bigger than God. You know, these are things that people need to hear. And, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed about with therapy. And I know that's a big part of your ministry right now. And when we come back, we can talk a little bit about that as well. But I want to open the phones. Final segment, maybe the final 10 minutes with Dr. Danny McGuire when we come back. If you want to get in, it's a good time to make that call. I'll try to grab as many calls as I can. The number's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You can call now. Our conversation continues right after this.
Wish you could hit rewind on that convo? Listen to the podcast on relevantradio.com or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. Great to be here with you today. You know, I was talking today, and you can join us. Dr. Danny McGuire joins me. He's a former second-generation law enforcement professional and served in the city of Chicago, Cook County, there for about 22 years, and is the department chair at Calumet College of St. Joseph for Public Safety Programs, also serves as a mental health therapist intern. And helps, really his specialty is the treatment of first responders. And I think it's such a good conversation to kind of pull back the veil, look at what's happening behind. When you turn on the news or you go to the internet, you get one or two stories. And those stories are either that, look how horrible police are, we need to defund them, or you get the story like I talked about, seeing these guys diving into icy cold water. You know, they don't care about what they have on, their clothes, their watches, et cetera. And they're saving a human life. I mean, it's pretty amazing. But there's so much, we're all human, you know? It doesn't matter whether we all put our pants on the same way. It doesn't matter whether you're badge or not. Life is often filled with trauma. And quite often, you know, we need healing. And all of us are seeking fulfillment and happiness. And it can only be found in one area. It's not in the bottle. It's not in our title. It's not in how much money we have in our bank account. It's in God. And God's such a big part of this equation. I know you found that out yourself. Do you incorporate God into your therapy, your ministry? How does that work for you? And how do you see God fitting into all this?
I incorporated it in everything I do. So you asked how I found it. When I moved from the south side to north side, I needed to change the scenery. So I moved up and I met a guy named Brandon Pagan, who's the focus director at Mary Seat of Wisdom, my parish in Park Ridge. And we sat there and we had coffee for 2.5 hours. He just arbitrarily called me, said, let's meet. I want a new parishioner. And he introduced me to a gentleman named Father Matt Foley, who really changed everything in my life. Father Matt invited me to a men's group that he was starting. And I'll never forget, it was 9/11. So it was September 11th, 2021. And he was standing there in his army uniform because he's an army chaplain. And he had a memorial to go to, a 9/11 memorial after that. And we met, we started with graces and crosses. A few months later, we transitioned to doing the readings for the week and answering some questions. And then we went to this book called Foundations in Discipleship. And there were 12 of us, which, you know, ironically 12, right? Foundations in Discipleship. And then we went off and started our own groups. And right now we have a group on Saturday mornings. I opened mine up to some first responders, police officers. I've opened it up to firefighters, whoever wants to come from the neighborhood or not in the neighborhood, whoever can make it. And we talk about the scriptures. We're just transitioning over to the Foundations and Discipleship book now. But because of Father Matt and because of the men in that group, there's men in that group that I've shared intimacies with that I've never shared with other people. Wow. And I have a bond with those men that I will never forget. They're closer to me than some of my own, the closest friends that I've grown up with.
Wow.
And it all started with that. And it all started with finding my faith in God again, being sober, finding my faith in God, and then bringing that to the police officers, telling them, hey, there is hope. because some of they feel like there's no hope. At least from my perspective as an educator and a therapist, some of them feel like there's no hope and they can't do anything to win. And let me say this. Police officers, firefighters, first responders, I'm going to stay with police officers because that's my realm, right? Mm-hmm. All of them are very brave.
Yeah.
Police officers are some of the bravest, most ethical and professional people you're ever going to find in any profession anywhere, okay? Everyone talks about doctors and lawyers as a prestigious thing. You have to go to school for a million years. As I said in the beginning, find a profession where they will do what they do for what they get paid and the scrutiny they go under. They are the real heroes in our society. No one's buying a jersey with their number on it, right? No one's going to a ball game with, hey, go, right? But they're the real heroes because, you know, if, you know, the sandwich ends up there and they got to eat that sandwich one bite at a time at the ballpark, there's some sort of attack or something's going on. Police officers are running in there.
Yeah.
They're running in to stop it and save people. And they're giving their own life in a second to save those people. You know where the ball players will be? They'll be locked underground. Yeah. They won't be there with their baseball bats or their football. Sorry to any pro athletes listening, but, you know, I have this whole ideology on that we could go down a rabbit hole. But the police officers are the real heroes. They're the ones that are going to make it happen when that stuff happens. So those are the people that should be heralded as heroes.
Yeah, yeah. I should see the footage of the guys running up flights of steps during 9/11.
For sure.
You know, the firefighters there, these paramedics who deal with the horrors. And you're right about the police. I think that was very eloquently said. They really are. You take a look at what they get paid for what they have to do, and that's risk their life on a daily basis. I'm glad to hear about the ethics and the morality there. You know, therapy, I know this is your area of expertise now. So often it had a stigma associated with it. Is that changing now? Are people getting beyond the idea? Because so many people I know anymore are totally open to therapy. I think it's a different generation than maybe when we grew up, how people looked at it. And I hope people are open to it because, you know, mental health is an important part of, you know, of who you are, and you need to be healthy. It's what God intends you to be. How do people view it, and where are we today in terms of how people view it and access it?
I think people are more open to it, especially in law enforcement. The problem resonates with the resources, right? Like a police officer will say, hey, I'd rather go to a therapist who has been a police officer that will understand the things that I'm going through. There are resources within the police department, but you may only have like 10 therapists for 9,000 police officers. So, I mean, it's just an unrealistic thing. It's about resources. So I always try to put out to my students and even my clients, you know, like, look, if there's a particular client I have that I think another therapist I know in the field will help them better, I'll refer them to that therapist because I think maybe they'll have a bond. So I think they're open to it. They're more available to doing it. They're just looking for someone that's going to fit. You know, they don't want to pound the square peg in the round hole, right? They want to go in the square hole.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Danny, I only have a couple minutes left. Some final thoughts for you, whether you want to speak to first responders or just to the public at large, what message you want to leave with everybody?
Oh, I just like to leave what I had said earlier. Police officers are some of the bravest, most ethical people you're going to find. You know, don't let, you know, an isolated incident that happens somewhere skew your view on police officers or police policies and things like that. I mean, everyone always says, you know, one bad apple will ruin the bunch, but it's not about the bad apple. It's about the larger society of the police officers. I mean, you're talking, there's probably a million or less law enforcement agents in the entire country. Think about that. And they're catching all of the scrutiny for things that other people do. You had mentioned earlier about compliance. It's a compliance issue.
Yeah.
Like if I give you a lawful order to put your hands on the car and you're going to argue with me, come on. What do you think is going to happen? So are you looking to go on YouTube and be a YouTube sensation because you were arrested? I challenge people to pray for police officers, pray for firefighters, first responders. We just lost two firefighters in Chicago in 2 days, unheard of. Pray for them. Pray for our EMTs, our emergency room nurses. Pray for the everyday warriors that go out every day and do the things that no one else wants to do, but they want to talk about it. Just pray for them and keep them in high regard.
And I would encourage people to pursue these avenues. We need good firefighters and emergency room nurses and doctors and, you know, we need firefighters and paramedics and police officers. Really, it's important. I was saying to you, I don't know whether we were on the air. I think we were during break. It's vocational.
It really is.
It is a vocation. And we're called to sanctify ourselves, to grow in holiness in whatever our vocation may be, whether it's a broadcaster, whether you're in the field of medicine, whether you're in law enforcement, and you could change the world. God will use you, sanctify you, and sanctify those around you. So, Danny, thank you for being here. Thanks for helping.
Thanks for having me.
And not only serving, but now for the backside, for all that you do there. I know a lot of people are very happy. Carol tweeted, she just thanks for your service and for speaking the truth. And I'll re-echo that. It was great to have you here with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Closing note here, in about 2 hours, I am going to be praying the Family Rosary across America. I invite you to join me. Father Rocky will be away from the microphone, so I am going to be guest hosting that. So let's pray. We'll pray for all these intentions, and we'll pray for you in a particular way. Also, Cale Clark is coming up in a second. He's asked me to stop by. I'll be chatting with Cale in just a few moments. Man, I'm doing overtime today, aren't I? I'm doing all the shows. I was on Patrick this morning. Woo! Anyway, good to hang out with you. I'll be here for a few hours longer. And tomorrow, I hope you'll join me once again. Until then, remember, God loves you. So do I. We'll talk soon. Have a great day.